Yes, Steve.
Yes. There is a question from Indulek Hadidi, Salt Lake City. She's asking, what do you do when you feel very, very angry? How you try to harmonize or just keep this anger inside?
There's slokas in the Bhagavad Gita that deal with this in the second chapter. I can't recall right now, but telling us what we need to understand the sequence, what transpires before this. So the way Prabhupada rendered this was, he said, while contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment for them. And in other words, that means, I mean, it sounds a little abstract. It means you think about the things that you want. Let's try and put it this way. And then, like, thinking, feeling, willing, acting. So you think of what you want, then you become absorbed in thinking that. It's like dhyam, that word is used there. It's in the second chapter. Because it's like saying, it's like meditation. Actually, material life, existence, thinking is like meditation. We're absorbed in thinking about it. So we wish for that to be. Like, it was very popular in the New Age movement in the late 1980s, what they termed creative visualization. And in the Olympics, Winter Olympics this year, some of the athletes, they employ this kind of thing in their training. And creative visualization means if you think of something and envision that, it can happen. Right? So these athletes, they're meditating before they begin, they're meditating on that course and thinking how they will go. And sometimes they're also envisioning themselves winning or at the podium receiving a gold medal. It's really at the basis of mundane thought. That's why Krishna is dealing with it in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which, if I'm very fortunate, I will remember in time. So we're wish fulfillment. We want this person, place, or thing, right? We're subjective agents, but where our focus is outward into the objective world. And we're envisioning some objective scenario where that is egocentric, where we're at the center and things are going our way. And then what happens is things do not go your way. You may have noticed this. Like, I think of the saying, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. And then we see so many blades of grass moving that didn't ask our permission. Right? The rain came today, didn't ask our permission. Right? So many things like that. And we think, well, that would be absurd. Right? Who can control the rain and the blades of grass? We said, well, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. Something interesting to contemplate, and maybe there's a hidden message there. So when those blades of grass are moving and not according to how you want it, right, how we envision things happening, our wish fulfillment, the wish was not fulfilled, we become frustrated, and frustration gives way to anger. Oh, I think it's Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna, Samudbhava, Mahashano, Mahapapma, Vidyenam, Ihavairinam. Not the one I was thinking of, but another one has come. Kama Esha, Krodha. So it's saying, when desire, here, kam means lust, but we think, oh, lust, like that it's exclusively sexual. Not, that's why it's something called desire. Lust, more precisely sexual, but desire, we know, is a broader thing. So here we may take it, not precisely or exclusively as lust, but the broader concept of desire. This is Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudbhava. These things arise from Rajagun. But descend into Tamagun. When our desires are unfulfilled, we're disappointed, and repeated disappointment turns into frustration. And as frustration grows, it descends into anger. And he says, Mahashano Mahapapma Vidyeham Ihabarinam. That this is ruining everything in the world. Mahapap, I mean, it's very... He said there's like a fire that's devouring everything. Which is interesting. Of course, whatever Krishna says, that is Shrota Panta Shabda Brahma. The spiritual sound is descending into this plane and guiding us toward reality. But we see in this world, Freud, he understood something about this. He saw, he thought that everything, all movement, so to speak, the whole animation, like Guru Maharaj liked to say, is, and he said, the underlying motive that's moving everyone, particularly human beings, but the animals, it's so clear to see. But he said, is repressed desire or unfulfilled desire. And in an attempt to fulfill those desires, we're moving in this plane. So it's interesting that he said that because it parallels what we hear in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. And it has some basis in reality. And we were discussing this the other day because his nephew, everyone knows who Freud is, right? Say it in Russian.
Freud.
Right, okay? Everybody? And the Chinese. What does it sound like in Chinese? Just what I was going to say. So, his nephew occupied a major role in advertising. And we'll think, odd coincidence or interesting. But maybe there's some relation there. And here's the relation. Because the nephew is saying, like, Uncle Sigmund makes some good, you know, sehr good point, punkt. Sehr good punkt. Yeah. About this unfulfilled desires, repressed desire. And not limited to, but including sexual desire. So I'll give you an example. In the 19th century, when there was advertising, you can see an old catalog, say a hammer. We'll deal with something very simple. Right? The hammer, it has a metal claw and a wooden handle. So they the way they would sell that to someone would say, this metal is very good quality metal, and it's the casting is very precise. So it's very high quality metal, the casting is precise, it'll last a lifetime. And the wooden handle is, you know, mahogany or something like this. So they're telling you this thing, it does the job very nicely and it'll do it for a lifetime. And then people say, oh, that sounds like it, I'll buy that. But his nephew realized that about Uncle Sigmund and this repressed desire, unfulfilled desires, if you could speak to that, you could capture someone. So then what did it change into? They'd show a man, a very strong man, a very manly man, with that hammer. And he's hammering, and they said, when you have a hammer like this, you will feel like a man. And then sometimes in the picture, they show a woman admiring that man with the very strong, and the hammer, and he's hammering, and the woman. So they're telling you, when you have this hammer, you will get that woman. She will admire you when you use this hammer, and you'll capture her. That's pretty amazing, to go from functionality to addressing someone's repressed sexuality and unfulfilled desires as a means to manipulate them and capture them. And recently, not just recently, but a trade show. Many of our devotees have been to trade shows, right? On behalf of Full Dome. But your trade show is a little different. But I don't know if you've ever been to an auto show where they're showing all these new cars or cars of the future. And at the show, next to the brand new car or the car of the future, is always one or two beautiful women dressed very, shall we say, provocatively, to use a word. And they're showing the car like that. And what is it? The underlying subliminal message is that in this car, you get own a car like this, you get a girl like that. She'll jump in your car, right? To spell it out. So they're realizing this desire, and Krishna says in the second chapter, it can never be fulfilled. As long as you're outer directed, seeking inner fulfillment, that's not going to happen. So this is a very good advertising ploy. They're addressing something that's just impossible to achieve. But you will think, you will be seduced by the prospect, the possibility. And that's at the basis of material existence. This isn't just some academic exercise, or I'm telling you some, you know, peripheral information. I'm just using that as examples. It's at the root cause of material existence, which is what? Rain, serve in heaven, rain in hell. Which zone do you want to be in? The theocentric world, the egocentric world. In the egocentric world, you get to be king, you get to be queen. Again, back on the New Age philosophy, when they're talking about reincarnation and multiple lives, and people are very charmed by something or someone who will tell them that, and in a previous lifetime, like a woman, to say, you were a princess. And they go, I was? Yes, and then this happened and that happened, and you know, oh. But they never say, and in a previous life, you were a stool-eating pig. Right? Nayam de ho de ha bhajam liloke. Kastan kamam arhate bidbujam ye. Tapo dibyam yena putrika yena sattvam shudhye yasmad brahmasokyam tanantam. Not seeking Brahma Sukh, which is anantam, unlimited, but trying for the same pleasures that are available to the stool-eating pigs. We always heard about this from Srila Prabhupada, and we not really experienced that. I'd seen pigs or hogs in my lifetime. My grandfather showed them to me. But the stool-eating pig, we had yet to see. I don't know if that's on like Nat Geo or the Animal Planet. But when we went to Vrindavan, we saw. Because of, I don't want to gross everybody out, but a little bit. That's all I'll say. Open gutters with raw sewage and the pigs are going through there. They're the sanitation department. All right, I'm done. And once Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Vrindavan, mentioning this verse, it's from Rishabhdev in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nayam deha deho bhajam liloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbujam. That's it, vidbujam ye. And he said, not only, because this verse is saying, why should a human being try for the same pleasures that are available to the stool-eating pigs? And then Prabhupada said, what he saw on the airplane. And he is trying to think of what it was, the English word for it. They said, they are eating. He saw them serve, the flight attendants. He said, they are eating, what it is called? The pig's intestine? Like that. And one devotee way in the back from England, he said, sausage! And Prabhupada said, just see, immediate answer. Like another, he couldn't for the life of him think of what this thing was called that he saw on the airplane. But even with a remote description, immediately, just see, immediate answer. Like how spot on what he was saying was. And here's his point, he said, so it's saying, don't try for the same pleasures that are available to stool-eating pigs. He said, so he saw them eating this on the airplane, and because there's probably some Indians, and he said, I do not know if they are taking at home. Because some of them think when you ride the airplane, it's like you're exempt. Like a man sitting next to me, and he goes, oh, I see, you're... taking vegetarian? You know, and I said, yes, I've been for something. He goes, I'm also taking vegetarian. Oh, I said, how nice. He said, I'm also taking non-veg. I said, oh, okay. Taking vegetarian and non-vegetarian. See, in India, why do they say non-veg? Because in their hearts, they know it's wrong. They don't want to call it meat. Mangsha. They know what it is. So it's like saying non-carrot. I'm eating non-carrot. You know, it doesn't sound as bad as saying, I'm eating the flesh of another being that was living recently that was just slaughtered. You know. Mangsha in Sanskrit. Mang means me. Sa means he. The idea of being saying, as I am eating your flesh in this lifetime, you will eat my flesh in a future lifetime. So then you're supposed to say, is it worth it? Maybe I should just control my tongue. But here was Prabhupada's point. So he said, I do not know if they are taking at home. But I saw on the airplane. And he said, so not only are they trying for the same pleasures that are available to the stool-eating pigs, but they're eating the pig's intestine. You know, he'd say, just see, these things are going on. And if you see this, if you didn't know anything else, you'd know you were in the Kali Yuga. It would be safe to assume you'd entered the Kali Yuga zone. So, kama, this word keeps appearing, desire, an unfulfilled desire. So anger is the result of unfulfilled desire. And as I asked Gopal earlier, this slok from the song of Narottam Thakur, can you say lali kama krodha lobha? So Guru Maharaj said, and Gurudev, what he's saying is, there's a way to engage all of these things in the service of Krishna. And they say, oh, please tell me. So you mean I can be angry for Krishna? Like Gurudev always pointing out a various individual, like, angry man. But hear who the examples are and then see what the matchup is. So we're told Hanuman, he used his anger to rescue Sita, right? How did he channel his anger? Because this outrage that Ravana had taken the consort, a wife of Ramachandra, from his side, he burned down Sri Lanka, right? So he's given as an example of how to engage anger. Now, when it comes to calm, this is very interesting because Braja Gopis, you remember, they're teenage girls. From an objective point of view, they seem to be the teenage girls who are obsessed with a teenage boy. But we're told through this obsession of theirs, these teenage girls have a crush on a teenage boy. They're the highest liberated souls. That sounds unusual. What happened to like yoga and meditation? You say, no, the kind of their meditation on this boy goes way beyond the Paramatma yogis. That's nothing compared to this. So then we will have to understand, is the gopis calm something desirable or undesirable? What is at the basis of that? Is it repressed desire? Right? Unfulfilled desire? So it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamritam. Atmendriya Ichadare Bolekam Krishnendriya Priti Ichadare Premanam. What's the criterion for how this assessment is applied? Atmendriya, Atma, we're talking about, or may later speak about, Paramatma. There's Atma and Paramatma. So there's like Atma, Jivatma, and above, the overseer, Upadrastanu Mantacha, Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara, Paramatmeti Chapyukto, Dehesmin Purushapura. The observer, neutral, non-interfering. Like we're told, two birds on a tree, one bird, the tree is karma, one bird eating the fruit, the other bird observing. When it comes to Chaitya Guru, that is not so neutral. That means some inspiration to go in the right direction. But generally speaking, Paramatma is neutral, passive, non-interference, because that's a necessary precondition for the free expression of free will. So, Krishnendriya. Indriya means senses. So, Atma, Indriya. When you're trying, Atmendriya, Priti, fulfill your own senses for your own purpose. Ichabole, Kam. That we call Kam. But Krishnendriya, Ichadari, Premana. But when it's to satisfy the senses of Krishna, it's called Prem. Gopi Prem, Krishna Prem. So we're told, the Braja Gopis, why do they make themselves look beautiful? To seduce Gopas? To seduce other men? No. They make themselves look beautiful for the pleasure of Krishna. That's why. That's why also the devotees, they try to make themselves look presentable, especially going before the deity of Krishna, for his pleasure. So, no body consciousness do they have. Right? Their whole being, like the friend said, raison d'être. Their reason for being is for the pleasure of Krishna. They have no independent existence, no desires independently of that. So we're told their desire, and here we can even call it kam. The kam of the Braja Gopis is prem. It's not Atmendriya, egocentric, but Krishna-centric. So, and I thought it was interesting because Gurudev was discussing this verse once. And he said, so Nartam saying, Kama, Krodha, say it again. Right. He's
taking to their own world.
Yeah. So, but he said, Matsarja is not mentioned. Envy. There is, and so here, there's no, you cannot envy the devotees. Beginning of the Bhagavatam sets this prerequisite for entering into an understanding of the Bhagavatam and Krishna conception itself. That dharma projita kaita bhota paramo nirmat saranam satam nirmat sarja. Matsarja means envy. Because Krishna consciousness ultimately is personified in Srimati Radharani, the devotee. You think, no, Krishna. No, but who's conscious of Krishna? The devotees are conscious of Krishna. Why Krishna wants to become Mahaprabhu? To experience Krishna consciousness. Everyone else is experiencing Krishna consciousness but me, because I'm Krishna. So to experience what they're, the position of a devotee, Radha Bhava Duti Subalita, Nome Krishna Sarupam. Radha Mahima, Sri Radha Panaya Mahima Kidyushobhana Eva Shradyo Yena Bhuta. Madhurima Vetiloba Sokyam Chasha Madanu Bhavata Kidusham Vetiloba Tad Bhava Dya Sachi Garva Sindhu Hirindu. So you cannot be envious of the devotee, otherwise you cannot please Krishna. It's that simple. Krishna loves his devotees. You have to also love them. And I've heard Prabhupada, Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Saraswati, they all said this English maxim, if you love me, love my dog. That's how you show your love. Then if you really love me, you'll love my dog. What does that mean? Aradhanam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat paratram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. Tadiya means what is dear to highest word, what is dear to Krishna. Madbhakta puja abhyadika. The worship of my devotee takes precedence over the worship of myself. Any substantial worship or devotion to Krishna is going through the devotee. And that's the strategy and the Rupa Anuga line and the Gaudiya. They see, who can please Krishna the most? If we're objective and we examine, where Bhagawan begins where? Vaikuntha. Lakshmi Narayan, but above that, Ayodhya, Sita Ram. Because by why, and when we mean higher, doesn't mean like in a geographical sense, but in terms of devotional enrichment and degree of dedication and self-giving. So it's a very careful analysis, but Vaikuntha, in short, has 2.5 rasas. Means Shanta and Dasya rasa there. Why half? Because in the case of some, Guru Maharaj said, some old-time servitors approaching friendship. So certain it's transitioning into certain elements of Sakya rasa. But he said, Rupa Goswami goes in a single time, Vaikuntaj Janito Bara Madhupuri Tatrapi Rasotsavad. He goes from Vaikuntha to Mathura in one leap. But Sanatan going step by step in Brihad Bhagavatamritam. So what is next? Ayodhya. Because there, there's, how do you say, there's some Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, and Madhura Rasa. Right. Sita Ram. But conjugal seva is exclusive to Sita. And we know this from various consideration analysis that, for example, think, how beautiful is Ramachandra? Vishnu is inconceivably beautiful. But he's more beautiful. When Rupa Goswami says, 50 qualities in Jiva, 55 officer class, 60 Vishnu, 64 Krishna, 62 and Ramachandra and Baladev. So Ramachandra is so beautiful. And after the banishment of Sita, still he's a Grihastha king. He has to do certain puja. And you need your wife sitting at your side to do this. So they commission yajna sitas, golden sitas for the yajna. Understand this. Ramachandra is so, and remember, when these, this level of divine personalities, the murti that they, like pran pratishta, very substantial. So the yajna sitas, they are enamored by the beauty of Ramachandra and express conjugal sentiments. They're murtis, and they're overwhelmed by the beauty of Ramachandra. So we thought the yajna sitas, also the Dandakaranya rishis, who are men. But deep in the core of their heart, spiritually, in their sarup, this is awakened in them. And Ramachandra is saying, no. And this ekpatni, one wife, although we see Kshatriya kings with hundreds, thousands, Ramachandra, one. And he said, but when I come later as Krishna, then your desires will be fulfilled. So Vedastuti, personified Vedas become gopis, Dandakaranya rishis become gopis, and yajna sitas become gopis. Still, so, but where is that expanded from ekpatni, one wife, and Dwaraka to 16,108 queens? But then how do you expand upon that? Go from svakya rasa, wedded love, to unwedded love, svakya, paramour, parakiya, which is Mathura Vrindavan, Govardhan, Radha Kunda. So I thought there's three classes, the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha, the Mahishigan of Dwaraka, and the Gopis of Vrindavan. So, why did I say this? Oh, who is dear to Krishna? So you cannot be envious of those who are dear to Krishna. What is the flaw in what is expressed by Mirabai? Her songs are always about Mira and Krishna. Krishna and Mira. No Radha, Lalita, no Ashraya Vigraha. So when someone thinks that way, it's possible, but it's not an intimate, it's a very distant Krishna conception, not a highly developed one. For it to be highly developed means Shakti, Shaktiman. So, but why did I say this? Oh, this is what I'm going to say. That. So in this plane, Nirmat Sarja, Nirmat Saranam Satam, cannot be envious of the devotee. And what's the inverted positive aspect that? Praise the devotee. Sing praise of the devotees. What is the Brihat Bhagavatamritam? But the step-by-step glorification, increased glorification and praise for unfolding, Guru Maharaj says, you know, the unfoldment of the heart, unfolding devotion and degrees of dedication and self-giving. That's what I'm saying, not in a linear sense, but according to degree of dedication. That's why the waters of Radha Kunda are so divine, as Gurmur said, Radharani in liquid form. To bathe in that means to bathe in the waters of self-sacrifice to its most extreme degree. That's what you're being encouraged to do. And interestingly, how did that book begin? It's right, it's thematically there. Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam. jiva begam ularopasta begam etan beganyo visheta dira sarvam apimam prithivim sashishyat. So it says vacho begam manasa krodha begam. Means the urge. If the tongue isn't controlled, we are told none of the senses are controlled. Tongue must be controlled. Speaking about Krishna or what is in relation to Krishna or the service of Krishna. Obviously, we have to speak those things. But Krishna-related talk and manasa krodha, so krodha is there, anger. If the tongue is out of control, the mind is out of control, one will be angry, it just goes on and on and on and has a bad ending. So, but back to this point about envy. You see, and Rupa Goswami says this in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of his observations is that in pure devotion, devotees are always appreciating the devotion of another. Guru Maharaj says, once you've converted, you know, in the general sense, the Krishna consciousness, it's easier to understand who Krishna is, right? And hopefully not to be envious of him. But like some of you know, he gets to enjoy everything. Don't we get something? Krishna gives everything to his devotee. But, so he said, it's easy to understand Krishna's position, but where it'll be determined, what type of devotee you are, how do you see his devotee? Respectfully, do you praise them? And not just like, oh, now I have to force myself to praise somebody. How do they do that? But rather, seeing some devotional thing that a godbrother, godson, and like, appreciating that. Guru Maharaj said, that's the hallmark of progressive devotion, of Madhyamadikar, is to appreciate others are making progress. To relish that. To celebrate their progress. And to lament if someone appears to be going down. To lament that. So it gives them pain to the heart. And to celebrate and acknowledge their devotion. That's critical to developing devotional heart and thinking. And it's presented perfectly in Brihad Bhagavatamritam. Going from one level, Narada praising one devotee, they're deflecting, deferring in praise of someone they consider superior. Goes on and on and on. And then as all good stories end at the lotus feet of Radharani and the Vrajagopis. Asam aho charanarenu jusham aham sham brindavane kimapi gumalato sadinam yad dushta jam svajanam arjapatam chihitva bejur mukunda parivim shruti birvamigyam. Uddhava Sena. After Krishna sent, like, oh, take this message to, I hear Radharani and Brajagopis, Nanda, they're all suffering, please. Take this letter to them and it'll give their hearts some relief, relieve the anguish in their hearts. But Krishna, whenever Krishna does anything, it's, what's the word? Manifold, multi-purpose. He wants Uddhava to see their devotion also. That's when Uddhava becomes an eyewitness, an ear witness to the Brahma or Gita that comes out of Radharani in her intense separation from Krishna, which what is then relished by Mahaprabhu in the association of Srup Damodar and Ramananda Roy behind closed doors in the Gangbira and Jagannath Puri. Very, these separation zenith points. So it's not incidental or anecdotal. Coincidence. Seeing that Radharani, that they have no body consciousness, they only live for Krishna. Their bodies are composed out of dedicating tendencies. When Bhaktivinod Thakur concludes the Kalyana Kalpataru, and he, you know the word, what is it? Jarudar means the sweeper.
Jarudar.
He says, very humbly, after all so many beautiful songs, all Krishna consciousness is expressed there. How did he say? In the Namhatta of Nityananda, Namhatta of Nityananda Prabhu, this lowly Jarudar, sweeper Bhaktivinoda, you know, presents us. Like Trinadupi Suni Chena. But Saraswati Thakur said, if Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a sweeper in the Namhat of Nityananda Prabhu, then what is my position? One of the straws in his broom. That's my position. So then we could think, oh, very cleverly he's speaking. But Guru Maharaj said, not just cleverly, this is from his heart. If that's the position, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then I would be a straw in his broom. Trinadapi Sunichena. So, and then Guru Maharaj said something very precise and unique. He said that if we take it as being sincere, and it is, he said, then you can understand the unit of construction of the Swaroop. This sort of dedicating tendency and devotional expression, heartfelt devotional expression, he said, it's a unit of construction of the Swaroop. So the Swaroop in this sense is, as I've said before, the body is the biological expression of the soul's delusion. The Swaroop is the rupa, the form that is personifying one's devotional tendency. The whole spiritual world is chinmoy. So that means the spiritually enriched consciousness, and then this with the highest sort of dedication. That's what everything there is comprised of, is dedicating tendencies, components, one after another, and infinite expression. And realizing their highest form and expression, beauty, charm, sweetness, and Srimati Radharani. So the gopis, this point, when they realize she can satisfy Krishna the best. We should promote her. That's how we know you really want to please Krishna, is you're searching who's the best servitor. That has its parallel in this plane. Right? Not to hold someone down. But to promote them. And Radharani being the supreme devotee, she is also pushing others toward Krishna. Seeing their qualities, oh, this one will be good for that, that one, oh. I remember here, the first few days I joined, that Prabhupada said, when someone newly, you know, comes to Krishna consciousness, that Radharani goes to Krishna and said, oh Krishna, you must accept them, they're better than me. I mean, we know that's impossible, but that shows her mood. She's very happy, not thinking, oh, a competitor. Even when she considers the competition, it's from a devotional point of view. Why is there competitors or opposition? To enhance their devotional position. To allow Krishna to say ultimately who he is, who he favors, who is really his priya. And this brings us to this point. So Gurudev said, notice that Narottam said, there's no way to engage envy. But then I was thinking, in this plane, but if we look to that plane, like it's even in the sloka of Rupa Goswami, which I, it doesn't come to my mind, Saki, Murali, Chidralena, Nirasa, Granti, I forget the words, but it's from the mouth of Chandravali, who is Radharani's competitor, opposition. But it's written by Rupa Goswami. He's writing it there, it's for education. And I thought, could this be an example of envy of the good kind, if there could be such a thing? And what it is, Chandravali, she is expressing envy toward the flute of Krishna and saying, how did he get this position? She's saying, nirasa means with no juice, right? Bueno, the bamboo, is when it dries out, when a bamboo flute has no juice in it, right? It's dry. They don't use moist bamboo to make flute. It has to be dried out. So he's saying, this bamboo flute, which has no nirasa, no rasa, is always at the lips of Krishna. See, this, and he's not even female. And he's positioned at the lips of Krishna, and all the nectar of the lips of Krishna are entering the flute and making intoxicating environment. She said, what is this? That is meant for us, and this flute is intercepting the nectar of Krishna. So in the form of and of expressing envy, oh, and the knots, grunt knots on the flute, there, that word can be mean also fault in Sanskrit, double meaning. Because we know they have some bump and then a bump and then a bump and holes. Right? Holes can also mean flaws. Right? Like when they say, oh, there's a hole in your idea. I mean, there's a flaw, something wrong with it. We still say that. So she's saying, so many flaws, no rasa, and is a male, and intercepting all the nectar from Krishna, the lips of Krishna. What is this? But I thought, oh, this sort of envy is glorifying the flute. How great is the flute of Krishna? In the end of the Brahma Sangita, what do they? Katāgānam natyagamanam priyāsakhi bhaṅkṣi priyāsakhi, his dear friend the flute. In that world where all movement is dance, all speech is song, and he's always with his favorite attendant, the flute. So in the guise of expressing some envy, actually, we're seeing how glorious is the flute of Krishna. So in that plane, even the opposition is promoting Krishna conception and the glories of Radharani, Brajagopis, and all the devotees. But to conclude, and I said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God, and maybe there's a hidden message there. We notice it's moving without our permission. And we've heard it's moving under the will of God. So if we take it that what that is telling us, because then why are we so much concerned with blades of grass? It's metaphorical, representational. So it's saying the events in this world, the circumstances, the situations that you find yourself in. Krishna's in the background. We're trying to control. Even aspiring devotees, we're trying to control the world and its influence on our situation. We are. All people do this. Everybody. on the basis of how they perceive their self-interest. They want to see a particular outcome. We're envisioning, back to creative visualization, envisioning a particular outcome. And not coming, we're frustrated and angry. But then we're told, Tattenu kampam susamikshamano bhunjane vatma kritam vipakam, that samiksha means to examine, to analyze. And we're also always doing this. We're thinking about what happens in our lives and our relationships with others. But su is an intensifier. So here we'll say, samiksha means to examine, then su samiksha would mean to scrutinize deeply, to look very deeply into the situation. So we're told that which on a superficial level externally is displeasing us and inducing anger and frustration, sometimes hopelessness, helplessness. If we look deeper, we say, well, I know in the back, everything is ultimately under the control of Krishna. So why is this happening to me now? Is it Krishna forgot about me? Or, no, that cannot be. Krishna never forgets anyone for a moment. And that's what I meant to say the other day. We're never alone. No one is ever alone for a moment, actually. And you say, no, there's no other people. You know the upadrashta, the in our consciousness, we're always saying something, talking. We think, talk, and talk, think, right? Because I would ask people who are bilingual, like yourself, you're multilingual and others, that which language do you think in? And that's interesting. Or I would ask bilingual people, when you have a dream, in which language was the dream? And which language do you think in? It's just something to think about sometimes. I mean, you know the answer to it. Maybe you go in and out of two languages and those thoughts. But, so, in other words, what this is displeasing me. Did Krishna's in control of everything and this happened? So then I'll have to readjust my thinking that why did Krishna have this happen to me? What good am I supposed to extract from something that is apparently so wrong and so bad or so undesirable or so anger-inducing? What am I to learn from this? And that requires some atma-samiksha, self-analysis, self-scrutiny, some thoughtfulness in the background, to look deep, more deeply behind us. No doubt it's displeasing immediately, superficially. But if we go deeper, say, well then, why? Sometimes it's easier to see in retrospect why certain things happen to push you in a particular direction. And we're speaking more specifically about the spiritual path. But we're to learn the art of seeing that in our circumstances. So Kunti, rather than becoming angry, or people say, I'm angry at God, how could he allow this? Yeah. Her thing is a little different. Vipidak shantutak shashvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yatsyad apunar bhavadarshanam. She's saying, when I'm in adverse circumstances, I find I become more dependent on you. Then I'm more focused on you. I'm more dependent upon you. When things are going relatively well, I have a tendency to become forgetful, or you go into the periphery or into the background. But when I'm in trouble or in adverse circumstance, then I'm very focused on you and your holy lotus feet. So in my opinion, adverse circumstances are more desirable. And we'll say, well, that is Kunti Devi, the great queen, and well, that's why she's in the Bhagavatam. But it shows there is a plane of that type of thinking. And she epitomizes, personifies that type, how glorious she is to think, and we go, oh. So devotional thinking is really different. How to interpret all these relative circumstances in relation to the Absolute as a path forward. To the service world, the Seva Mayoyam Loka, our ultimate aspiration to be unconditional servitors, the holy lotus feet of our Guru Varga. Hare Krishna.